To introduce our plenary speaker, I'd like to invite now to the stage my colleague and actually my former boss, Lawrence Kaplan. Larry is director of the Alaska Native Language Center, an organization which has been dedicated to the documentation and conservation of Alaska's languages for 45 years. Larry is no stranger to the islands, having worked closely with our colleagues at the UH Hilo campus, and many of you will also know him from his work as host of CoLang, the Institute on Collaborative Language Research, this past summer. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Kaplan.
Thank you, Gary. Aloha kakahiaka. Uvlaloatak, as the Inupiaq people say in northern Alaska. That's good morning. It's really a pleasure to be here with you this morning at this conference. I was at the first one, and it's great to see how it's developed. And particularly, I have the honor of introducing my colleague, Dr. Alice Taff, whom I've known for quite a long time. Dr. Taff did her PhD, finished it in 1999 at the University of Washington, working in the phonetics of Eastern Aleut intonation. That language is now mostly called Unangam Tunu, and it's the language of far southwestern Alaska, the Aleutian Islands and the Pribilof Islands, a rather remote place with very interesting history and language. She's currently research assistant professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, located in Juneau, Alaska. And there she's done quite a lot with the Tlingit language, which is the native language of that region. She works in language documentation, Tlingit translation and transcription. She's been and is the principal investigator on a number of grants, NSF grants. In addition to Tlingit and Aleut, she's worked with the Dead Hanag language in terms of documentation, teaching, and that's an Athabaskan language of interior Alaska. She's worked with language pedagogy, developing language lessons, dictionary work for endangered Alaskan languages, language revitalization, all subjects near and dear to the hearts of those present today. She's even worked a little in Russian language, because we do have Russians in Alaska, and a little with Alaskan English, which is quite an interesting subject on its own. She is a member of the CoLang Advisory Circle, so the Collaborative Language Research Institute. And CoLang was held at the University of Alaska last summer. She was a co-director there. And she's a recent past president of SELA, the Society for the Study of Indigenous Languages of the Americas. So very, very active in all these fields. And her recent work is on language and wellness, and that's why she's here with us today. She has a forthcoming Oxford Encyclopedia co-authored article on how indigenous language use affects wellness, and I'm very much looking forward to that. And I will just tell you that she presented on this subject to my linguistics seminar a couple of weeks ago, and after class one of my students said, "We've been studying the history of linguistics. I think this is about the future of linguistics, because it's a developing area in the field." And so maybe we're on the cutting edge of something here with this conference. And starting all that out with Dr. Taff's plenary address, I give you the person we've been waiting for. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry, for that introduction, and let me add Gunas Chish Hati Adi. Thank you all for coming. It's good to look upon your faces, the friends I know from CoLang and Breath of Life and SELA and LSA. Yayagi Ink Yevchat Yatiyi. Gunashchish Ya'an G'den Yishatina Ye. Thank you to the Hawaiian people, caretakers of this land, for letting me be here to speak with you today. Chak Yuchaduasak. My adoptive Tlingit name is Chak. Takneng Tan Nach Chatsati. And my clan is Takneng Tan. Yesh Ayachat. I'm of the Raven Moiety. Gunush Chish, Andrea Gary, and host of thousands for your work in preparing this conference for us. It's a great honor for me to be speaking here with you today. And I'm going to ask you to forgive me for my mispronunciations and my misconceptions. And I'll appreciate your corrections. Aloha. Igwai Juan. This is a Tlingit phrase, not directly translatable into English, meaning something like, be of good courage. We've got your back, we support you. I use this Tlingit phrase to strengthen us as we attend to this tragic subject of the ravages to individual and community health by the recent relative to the timeline of indigenous peoples, the recent effects of language loss. The image here is of Z'acht, a powerful Tlingit medicinal plant. This morning, I'd like to share with you a wealth of robust scientifically and culturally valid evidence that using an ancestral indigenous language is beneficial to the health of individuals and communities. But I can't. As we sit here, there is scarce research on this subject, and I'm looking to all of you to fill in the gap. My hope is that during these next few days we have here together, we'll come up with many schemes to provide additional evidence. Most of what I'll share with you today is from the United States, Canada, and Australia because of the data available to me and the literature derived from that data. So I'm hoping that you'll give me information from many other places. The following here are three graphics that very simplistically illustrate the land, people, and culture and language interrelationship. In this image, indigenous people stand on a disc representing the land they belong to. It nurtures them. It nurtures them with its features and resources, the air, the water, the terrain, the plants, the animals. Vertically are some cultural pillars that the people develop to fill their needs as they live on the land. Food, shelter, ritual, place names. Above the people is their sheltering language with some modes of expression, encapsulating their knowledge and ways of living together on the land. This is a healthy community. When the land to which they belong is pulled out from under them, this is a major trauma. When their sheltering language is pulled out from over them, they experience another trauma. These two traumas are sources from which symptoms such as diabetes, alcoholism, suicides derive. Inspiration to pursue the link between language and wellness first came to me from Leanne Hinton's Green Book of Language Revitalization in a chapter that she wrote on the mentor-apprentice process. She wrote, the positive benefits To the self-esteem of the elders themselves are often notable. Sometimes elders even tell us that they're getting better health reports from their doctors lately, which they attribute to their work with their apprentices. Lien Gidahan. Later, how much more do we know about the connections between using an ancestral language and health benefits? An early article, 2009, a Noah MacIver, Art Napoleon, and Carissa Dickey's article, Language and Culture as Protective Factors for At-Risk Communities, noted that the majority of the existing literature focuses on culture and its effects on health. Therefore, more studies are needed, specifically on the potential health benefits of Indigenous language use. And when I started asking people what literature is there on this subject, they would point me towards this article. Anoa Gidahan. So why is this an important link to establish? To me, I can think of two reasons, and I hope you'll share more reasons with me. One is to reassure language communities that their languages are of value to their well-being. Melvitha Chi, a PhD student, Navajo, reported last January, or the January before that now, to the Society for the Study of the Indigenous Languages of the Americas that in her region, many people in her language community see no use for using or learning Navajo. So the communities are one audience. Another audience is to establish for the general public and funders that investments in Indigenous language continuity is an investment in health, and to convince healthcare providers to prescribe language use and insurance companies to pay for it because it's health effective and it's cost effective. So definitions, this is the definition of language that I'm going to be speaking from today. A language is an agreement among a community of speakers that certain symbols, whether they're signs or sounds or text, have certain meanings. I'd like to acknowledge the origin of this definition, so if anybody knows what it is, please let me know. So we have community agreement about symbols and meanings. For a definition of health, I don't have one to pin down. In 1948, the World Health Organization defined health as a state of complete mental and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. So they're looking at this definition, absence of disease, and saying it's more than that. And we have in middle America, medical health industry, this kind of absence of disease notion. So it seems as if even 1948, the perspectives from the rest of the world were saying, well, it's more than that. I'd like to give kudos to Doug Whelan for establishing the Healing Through Language Organization, part of the Endangered Language Foundation, to support language programs around the world and to support assessment of health benefits of these programs. I'd like to have Daryl Baldwin from the Healing Through Language site describe Nyamya concepts of health. Here's the site.
The notion of health is more broadly expressed in our language as nahe meto sene wenge. It could be translated as living well or living properly. This expression attempts to capture the idea that general well-being hinges on something more than just physical health. We also have a departing term in our language, which is nepoch kalo. This term has multiple meanings depending on how it's used, but it generally evokes the notion of awareness, wisdom, and knowledge. This term is important because it preserves the notion that what we must seek to do in life is simply to know. Seeking knowledge is how we...
Daryl Gidahan. From Australia, Western Desert Aborigines see health not only in the absence of sickness, but more positively on the physical side in the presence of coldness and dryness in the body, and on the spiritual side in having one's spirit in the area of the stomach. Conversely, when the spirit moves to the back of a person or leaves the body altogether, when the body is hot and wet, then the person is considered sick. I first saw this quote from Peel in a presentation of Michael Walsh's to the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Michael Gidahan. Also from Australia, Aboriginal health refers to the social, emotional, cultural well-being of the whole community in which each individual is able to achieve their full potential as a human being, thereby bringing about the total well-being of their community. And thinking about mental health, hallucinations do not necessarily imply organic pathology, but operate within a kind of lucidity that not only has mystical and religious dimensions, but also is expressive of the micro and macro politics of a given sociality. Ojibwe people's health model is the Ma de Ziwan, balancing one's relationship with the surroundings, with one's surrounding living beings, the environment, and the individual physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual needs of the human condition. Shenget people's wellness includes Tuwu Shatsin, inner strength of mind or heart, courage, resolve, or power, and the concept of Ujjah Atkudmidash, to make things weigh the same or balance. To enable the health and well-being of the whole community, respect is manifested in the balance of reciprocity among clans, individuals, and the environment. Although spirituality is not a measurable health factor for Western medicine, remarks about spirituality and its health effect on health are included here. Indeed, not everything that Indigenous peoples perceive can be measured. If the term spiritual disagrees with you, please translate the notion of an imbalanced spirit, which the current Western medically treated condition stress is recognized. Physicians treat physical symptoms for stress. And as to English, in the English language, dictionaries tell me that the word health is from the Anglo-Saxon word hale, which means whole. So we've come a long way from that definition in the English language. So today, here are some factors we'll consider, being careful about correlation versus causation, qualifiable and quantifiable evidence, qualifiable as stories or anecdotes, and quantifiable as statistics and numbers. Who trusts the stories? Who trusts the numbers? Lost my cursor. So we'll look at symptoms for symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, suicide rates, at-risk factors for youth and school absenteeism as they relate to language, what some of the mechanisms might be for moving from language to wellness, noting ACEs and epigenetics, and what our future work might be. Okay, I need this cursor. But I need it here.
Oh, you need it right here.
Yeah.
Where is it next?
That's what I'm asking. So I hope we can use this spell of interest to seek scientific validation for the language wellness effect. And for scientific validation, let's pay attention to the difference between correlation and causation. This is a photo from the Juneau, Alaska Empire. In some places, as here, I noticed yesterday, when it rains, people use umbrellas. Umbrellas and rain are correlated. And can we conclude then, because they're correlated, that umbrellas cause rain? So be careful about that. Gary Holton, writing on the subject of language and wellness, reminds us not to confuse correlation with causation. But even if we can't yet show that language use causes greater well-being, the fact that a correlation exists should be enough for us to take the issue seriously. Gary, get on. So let's consider some evidence for the language and wellness link, starting with what might be called stories or anecdotes, but I'm going to call them eyewitness accounts because we trust eyewitness accounts in the news, right? So these are eyewitness accounts. We'll hear from Elena Eagle Shield and Tipizuan Tolman, a Lakota language teachers, who's seen this film, Rising Voices. So some people here have seen it, and this is a little outtake from Rising Voices.
When you're healthy, you raise the level of health of the people around you, and I think that language does that for a person. It's a proven path to a better life in terms of finding out who you are, feeling that connection to the relatives before you. I see huge changes in the kids, and I see it in affect and influence their personalities and identities because they completely and fully believe that they're supposed to speak their language and that they're supposed to pray and that they're supposed to be Lakota people in and outside of the classroom. And so it's amazing to me. They don't even know how awesome they are. They just go to school where everyone's family and they get to speak Lakota. I mean, I don't think until they're older will they realize the full extent of how amazing they are and what they're doing for our people. Our kids walk into our classroom with a sense of security, with this.
Next, we'll hear from J.C. Hall Tatutini, a PhD student at the University of Oregon.
Wellness in general isn't just physical health, it's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual, and that having that connection, that core that connects us to who we are, to our identity, helps create that balance. What creates sickness is not just colds, it's not just bacteria, it's those emotions, that shame, anxiety. Where do those come from? Maybe a spiritual malaise being represented as stress and anxiety. When we target those emotions through language, through these cultural practices, through just feeling balanced and centered, I believe that that stress and that anxiety can decrease. And I made a commitment for 4 years to not drink because I wanted to be a good language learner, because I wanted to be able to look at my elder and speak to him and not feel ashamed of myself. I'm 33 now, and I haven't drank since I was 20, which I think that's a pretty big sign of wellness. I am working on this language that I have this responsibility, and if I treat myself badly, I'm treating this language badly. If I treat myself badly, the spirits help, and maybe they won't talk to me. Maybe they won't give me that advice.
Alfie Price is small guy. Tsimshian. He's a language warrior for the Tlingit Nahida, Central Council of Tlingit Nahida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He's learning three Southeast Alaskan languages. And here's what he had to say at an award recognition in his honor. And you're going to hear a few comments during his speaking from babies.
Learning our languages is healing. It's healing to the languages. It's healing to our grandparents, our uncles and aunties, who are speaking our languages. It's healing to us, an unexpected side effect of learning Seminole, especially, is I found my own healing. The hurts and the things that make me bitter in my life are falling away. They are becoming light on my shoulders. Walking into a room where people who are I don't get that feeling of, do I really belong here? Am I a little less than? Those feelings are going away. These are unexpected side effects because of the language.
Dale McCreary is a linguist at the University of Victoria. He was reporting at the Language in the Present conference in the fall of 2015, and he was doing what we might call typical linguistics research, translations, transcriptions, documenting. But he can't help but notice a health effect on people he's working with as they activate their ancestral language.
Through the time that I've been working in Kantu and continuing into Bellakula, another factor started to figure more and more prominently in my evaluation of what I was doing. Health. Now, I won't go into too much detail, but I've had more than one elder show clear signs of reversing mental aging, for want of a better word, having their short-term memories improve, and the like. Beatrice Elliott, in particular, went from constantly falling asleep while recording, constantly forgetting the question or topic being discussed, and her family widely considered her to be going into dementia or already being in dementia, to the point 6 months later, she translated an entire story she'd never heard before in one go before I could even start repeating it sentence by sentence. And she had entirely stopped losing her train of thought while recording, stopped nodding off, was always focused and there, and these abilities had extended into the entire rest of her life to where her family and friends and those who had known her thought considered that she had woken up again.
So this reminds us to not give up on people who aren't with it at the moment, but keep them engaged and see what happens. I've had lots of people give me other similar stories about people in their communities. So we heard some eyewitness accounts, and let's switch to some quantitative analyses. And because we just heard a bit about Alzheimer's, we'll take a look at an Alzheimer's study. And this research is not specifically about using an ancestral or indigenous language, because I don't have such studies at hand. Maybe people here will be doing them or are doing them. It's about being bilingual, so we can use it in our evidence. Who knows about Bialystok's work on bilingualism? So, in a 2012, Bialystok and her team found that on average, bilinguals begin to show symptoms of dementia 3 to 4 years later than monolinguals. In a later study, a review of bilingualism and executive function, she noted evidence of bilingual advantage in executive function, those skills involving mental control and self-regulation, not verbal skills, but being able to figure things out skills, that better executive function correlates with greater bilingual experience for adults and children, even in 6 and 7 month old infants. She reports on a study in which monolingual participants who undertook a year-long university level course in either psychology, introductory psychology, or introductory Spanish were tested before and after the course on executive function tasks. Before their course, they all, in aggregate, performed equivalently on these measures. But after their course, participants in the Spanish group outperformed the psychology group on executive function task. 1 year classroom study. At all ages, the bilingual advantage in nonverbal executive function emerges with more bilingual experience. We need research to find out about these issues as they pertain specifically to ancestral indigenous language use. The neuroprotective effects of bilingualism upon the inferior parietal lobule, a structural neuroimaging study in aging Chinese bilinguals. Abu Talabi et al. In 2015, these are not photos from that study. The study found that whereas monolingual speakers showed reduced gray matter volume in the right inferior parietal lobules as a function of age, monolingual speakers, brain shrinkage. There were no age effects in the elderly bilingual speakers. The bilingual speakers compared to the monolinguals showed increased gray matter volume in both inferior parietal lobules. Monolinguals had shrinkage of their gray matter. Bilinguals, their volume was still increasing. So here's that inferior parietal lobule, white matter, gray matter. Who knows this article, 2008, Michael Chandler and Christopher Lalonde. Cultural continuity as a protective factor against suicide in First Nations youth. So some people are aware of this. The protective factors that were considered in British Columbia villages, which showed a great discrepancy among them in the suicide rate. So they wanted to find out what are the factors that are preventive against suicide. They looked at self-government, land claims, education, healthcare, cultural facilities, police and fire stations, and language. The reported results demonstrate that of all the factors listed here, only the language use indicator proved to have predictive power over and above that of the other six cultural continuity factors. Their one sentence finding is, youth suicide rates effectively dropped to zero in those few communities in which at least half the band members reported a conversational knowledge of their own native language. Let's look at risk behavior measurements from the 2008 National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Survey. The orange here is youth not speaking their ancestral language. The green is youth who do speak their ancestral language. So we see that in every case, victim of physical or threatened violence in the last 12 months, fewer people, 25%, were reporting this factor for the speakers, whereas 37% for the non-speakers. Drug use in the past 12 months, 26% for the non-speakers, 16% for the speakers. Binge drinking in the last 2 weeks, 34% for the non-speakers, 18% for the speakers. And they mentioned that 47% at that time of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders aged 15 to 24 in the rural areas spoke their language. Aggregate school attendance records are another take on language and wellness. At Harborview Elementary School in Juneau, Alaska, the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program, TCLL, incorporates Tlingit language and culture into all academic teachings in some of the classrooms. On the y-axis here, we have the average number of days missed per student. The x-axis is the school years 2000 through 2008. So the green is all the elementary students minus the native students. And a linear trend line there shows that there's a slight increase in missed days over the 8 years for the non-native students. The blue is the TCLL students. And their linear trend line shows a 26% decrease in average missed days for the first 8 years of this program. The red is the non-TCLL native students, and they showed a 1% decrease in missed days. Adding the data through 2013, look what happened to the blue trend line. And this is a two-period trend line from the beginning to a low point and of absenteeism, and then all of a sudden it shoots up. At this point, many of the TCLL program teachers retired and were replaced by inexperienced outside newcomers in Alaska. Outside with a capital O means outside of Alaska. You can find out more about this data from two Juneau Tlingit teachers, Siglu Chester and Nakashan Chester, who's gliding out. Siglu Nakashan. They're here, so maybe they're upstairs. In my investigation on the links between language and wellness, I've run into the terms ACEs and epigenetics enough times to want to learn more about how these might factor into the issue. Who's familiar with this term ACEs? Now, this research finds that adverse childhood experiences, that childhood traumas, have strong detrimental health effects in adulthood. The adverse experience factors that are measured on a questionnaire are emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mother treated violently, household substance abuse, mental illness in the household, parental separation or divorce, criminal household member, emotional neglect, and physical neglect. A person's ACEs score of 1 to 10 is the total sum of the different categories of ACEs reported by a participant, and it's used to assess cumulative childhood stress. The finding is that ACEs adverse experience in childhood, the childhood traumas, have a strong detrimental health effect in adulthood, and they correlate and presumably cause the childhood traumas, the symptoms of the trauma in adulthood. So, here we see the adult symptoms. Study findings reveal a graded dose response relationship between ACEs and negative health and well-being outcomes across the life course. So that is, as the number of ACEs increases, so does the risk for the symptoms. The stronger the trauma dose, the stronger the resulting symptoms or set of symptoms. But what mechanism can take us from childhood experience to adult illness? First, I suggest that language loss be added to those adverse experiences. Who's familiar with this term, epigenetics? Are there any epigeneticists in the house? Well, I'm going to tell you everything I know. It's going to take about a minute. So I really hope that we'll get more work done on this. Epigenetics, correct me if I'm wrong, is the study of an additional layer of instructions that control how our DNA is interpreted. That is how the genes are controlled and expressed. So epi means outside, like epidermis is the outside layer of your skin. And this picture of DNA, we're all familiar with that kind of thing. So a gene on the DNA string, a gene is on the outside of it, proteins, chemicals can attach and turn the gene off or on, change the way it functions. So how could ACEs and epigenetics affect health? This story starts with the language community intact. Then invasion comes along. Land is lost, causing traumas that negatively affect epigenetics expression. Next is language lost. Did I say language before? This is land loss, traumas. Then language loss, the general history, creating more childhood traumas that negatively affect epigenetics, leading to poor health symptoms in adulthood. The epigenome is inheritable, creating a cycle of generation symptoms from ancestors' traumas. Generational trauma. Can this cycle be broken? In a 2016 article by Gap et al., the potential of environmental enrichment to prevent transgenerational effects of paternal trauma suggests that negative epigenetic effects are reversible by an enriched environment. Of language use. I'm saying language use. They were working with, well, mice. Gotta start something. So we're enriching the environment with language use, repairing the epigenetics, and healing individuals and communities. Quoting from Gap et al., these findings highlight the influence of both negative and positive environmental factors on behavior across generations and the plasticity of the epigenome across life. Nicole Martin is a teacher of the Mohawk language. Here's her eyewitness account of trauma, epigenetics, and a healing. There's some traffic noise during this outdoor recording at Colang last summer.
So our children, and maybe even from the age of about 10 to the age of about 40, that whole area is, they're lost. They're completely lost. They got no roles. We've always had roles as a society. We've always had those responsibilities. And when we don't know those responsibilities, then we feel like we don't fit in anywhere. What do? So we just kind of exist. If you know the language and the culture's tied into the language, then it explains all that. When it comes to adults experiencing relearning their language, it's a connection that is so deep rooted and so to the core, touches their core, and they get so emotional. Like, it's just unbelievable how emotional one can get when they're able to speak their mother tongue. It's like our bodies, our blood memory remembers all that. And sometimes it's just like, it opens the floodgates for dreams. It opens the floodgates for emotions, like generations, just all bottled up inside of people sometimes that just cannot. Cannot describe why it is that they're so emotional, so grateful, and so just overwhelmed with the relearning of their mother tongue. And I think that when we're spiritually imbalanced, when we're imbalanced with creation, I mean, you might not always see it scientifically, but you can feel it. The more well we are for ourselves, the more we exemplify, I guess, wellness, and it radiates into other people's spaces and our families, our clan families. And so if one can relearn their language and begin to clean out the generations of trauma, we create a ripple effect, you know, within their bodies, within their communities, within their nation.
So, we've looked at the evidence. What can we do next? I hope you'll have lots more ideas about this. Documenters can document the way language expresses the concept of health or disease, how to live a healthy life in the culture, traditional cures, and wellness practices. We can assess, as Doug Whalen and Monica McCauley are encouraging us to do, assess health benefits from language use in any program or community that you engage with. Design and implement research projects looking specifically for language and health links. Collaborate with neurolinguists and epigeneticists. Work with super learners. Super learners are people who have used their language in the past, understanding if not speaking, but haven't been engaged with it for a long time. And I call them super learners instead of latent or dormant speakers, because some people resent those labels. And they're ready. They have 50, 80, 90% of the language already. So at a 2013 conference in Juneau, Alaska, Annie Johnston, Tlingit super learner from Tesla in Yukon, answers the question, does using my language affect my health? Does it affect my health? Not using my language affects my health. I'm a residential school survivor. I was taken when I was 5. The elders in my community say they remember me talking, even if it was just Tlingit baby talk. But that's all I spoke. Didn't take long for me to lose it. To speak in public is very hard. And I talk with other residential school people. Some of them are fluent speakers, they speak. But there's others like me that understand but don't speak. And we talk about what happens when we're trying. You get that lump in your throat, your stomach starts churning, and all the other emotions that come in there. Can we heal along with the language? I think we can. Can we heal in the language? We can. Because to me, the most powerful thing, when I look at my elders, I look at my auntie, and I can tell her, Ich Sichan. There's a pop quiz. This June 3rd, 2016 headline in the Canadian press, Justin Trudeau is quoted as saying, restoring Indigenous language is key to preventing youth suicides. Where might Trudeau have gotten this notion? From, you knew the article. Chandler Lalonde. But based on this knowledge, what action has his government taken? That was in June. This is March. Does anyone know? So we have an answer here, and you can help us out during the question period or at another time to let us know what's happening in Alaska.
Canada. He just visited the United States, that's all he did.
Oh. Trip south. Okay, here's a model for action. Hawaii State Senator Josh Green is sponsoring SB2 right now to have insurance cover housing as treatment for chronic homelessness, which leads to poor health outcomes. His figures show that housing as a treatment for health factors resulting from homelessness is money well spent. Homeless people have a plethora of health, don't treat those symptoms, provide homes. So your state legislature, SB1, will say, beginning January 1st, 2018, this bill requires all health plans in the state, including Medicaid managed care programs, 2018, to provide coverage for the treatment of language loss. My hope is that through our work to link language and wellness, we'll arrive at the point where healthcare professionals will prescribe ancestral Indigenous language activity and that insurance industry will pay for the activities. In the insurance executives here, state legislatures, 2015 Chandler and Dunlop article, Cultural Wounds Demand Cultural Medicines. If suicide prevention is our serious goal, then the evidence in hand recommends investing new monies, not in the hiring of still more counselors, but in the organized efforts to preserve Indigenous languages, to promote the resurgence of ritual and cultural practices, and to facilitate communities in recouping some measure of community control over their own lines. Cultural wounds demand cultural medicine. I suggest that active language continuity transmission of indigenous languages in the communities can be this medicine. That support for language continuity activities should be among the immediate and long-range remedies for cultural ills. That alongside supporting and prescribing community language continuity activities, healthcare researchers can collaborate with the communities to research and document possible health benefits to those actively using, from health benefits to those who are actively using their ancestral indigenous languages. President Obama wrote, "Change is never easy, but always possible." He quoted Martin Luther King Jr., "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Obama goes on to say, he's right, but you know what? It doesn't bend on its own. It bends because we help it bend that way. Our language is medicine, Napaya Hayukatangi. Use our language as medicine, Napayah Hayukatangi. So while we have light focused on the ICLDC theme, linking language and well-being, let's make a big push to provide evidence that this is the case. Remember, Iguayahuan, be of good courage. Gunas Chish.
I realize that we're getting close to 11 o'clock, but I want to make sure people have we get to hear from you guys and have time to address questions to our plenary speaker. So don't worry, we'll adjust the schedule a little bit if needed, but at this point we'd like to take questions from you guys, and also if you're upstairs watching in the remote sites, please contact, if you have a question that you would like to communicate down here, you can contact the organizers in each of those rooms and send your questions through them. So I'll help to moderate the questions that you want to address. Can I ask also, please, that if you do have a question, please find a microphone. Someone can bring you one of these remote mics or else come up to one of the mics. Because that will allow the people upstairs to hear your question as well. Can you make sure that's... Yeah, why don't you start here? Yeah.
Well, it's African aliens can walk in as a skeet as Kledman white sweat alien. Well, beans can have young dam a malam as I ended it kalmuk the tmuks yes do in sapis do can tell and his sleeping school has ushers and alien cheek school cares Halems as well I end walked. I'd like to say that I'm honored to be invited into the house of the people of this land so that we can talk about how we can strengthen and bring back our medicine and I'm honored to be among so many of us here that are concerned about strengthening our medicine. Ye matrachatan ktitums kutums chas is due to kolmukhskuk. Yes, our elders always tell me our language is our medicine. Ye malaman. Because those were direct gifts from the Creator for us. But the reason I came up here is that I've been fighting for languages in Canada for many years. Oh, by the way, I always forget that. I'm Chief Ron Ignis from Skeetiston, which is a community that's part of the Shuswap Nation, South Central British Columbia, Interior Salish. Because when I in our language, I always forget to think of myself when I get up, and because in our language you can't speak about yourself, you can only speak about others in high praise. And if you do speak about yourself, you got to speak in our language and diminish yourself, make yourself unimportant. So it's, and I do that by forgetting to about myself and just going speaking directly. But you put that picture up there about Trudeau. Well, I've been fighting for languages, and in 2000 and 2005, Sheila Copps appointed me to chair a National Ministerial Task Force on Language and Culture for Canada to lay out a strategy. I did that. Just when I tabled, we tabled our report with $160 million attached to it. 5 months later, conservatives got elected, shelved the report, pulled back the $160 million. And just recently, and I also formed back then the Chiefs Committee on Languages for the Assembly of First Nations, which is a national organization. Last fall, the national chief, I spoke with him. He brought me back in on the Chiefs Committee on this reestablished Chiefs Committee on Languages. We were lobbying all fall, and finally, December of 2016, at the AFN, Prime Minister Trudeau and the Minister of Heritage stepped up in the Assembly and announced that they're going to work with the Chiefs Committee on Languages to recognize Indigenous languages across Canada in legislation with proper and appropriate resourcing. And I'm going to be working with the Minister of Heritage, along with our Chiefs Committee, on designing that legislation for our languages in Canada. So.
Thank you. Sorry, it's not when it's great. He did it in a muskrat. They went to see it. Connect them only because I talk for each eyes need to come. I want to say thank you to the Hawaiian people for having us here and inviting us to do our work here on your land. I'm Larry Grant from the Musqueam First Nations, connected to the Musqueam UBC FNEL program that has been in existence for 20 years. And I need to make a comment about Michael Chandler LaLonde research paper regarding the use of language. In that research, they didn't use language until after they had a problem with Indigenous students, Indigenous people, youth that were being interviewed, had no response to a question of what they considered an Indigenous story. They wanted to ask about coyote. What is coyote doing in this story? And they were interviewing coastal people whose trickster is Spahl, the raven. So the thing about using our languages for healing, we need to have cultural competency in each community that we're working in, and not lump everything into a pan-Indianism issue that, you mean you don't make totem poles, or you don't wear feather bonnets? You mean you don't use canoes instead of horses? And Spahl is your trickster, Raven is your trickster, and not coyote. But once they asked the right question, they got the answers. And that's really, really important, I think, to show that we need cultural competency in our linguistic work that we are doing here to rebuild and revitalize and create that determinant of health that is so important to the revitalization of Ireland. I just want to say that. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I'm Megan Mechanic from the Huron-Wendat Nation out of Quebec. Canada. And I wanted to actually add something that I just found out about. I recently watched a documentary called Tribal Justice, which was just released in February. And it's about two Native Californian nations which have their tribal justice system situated on their reservations. And in the Quechuan tribe, I had the fortunate opportunity to ask questions of these tribal judges who were present at the screening. And I said, what do you think about language in with respect to people passing through the criminal justice system in your communities? And one of the judges, Claudette White of the Quechuan tribe, she actually prescribes language lessons to some of the people who pass through her court. And so I thought that was a neat way, too, of getting our communities rallied around language use, is that people who are having difficulties, that could be something that is mandated to them or something that is recommended to them by their own community members as not even community service, but as a necessary step towards being better and being well. So I just wanted to add that
little change.
I'm told there's no questions waiting upstairs, so we'll continue down here. I'm not sure who is next. Evan?
Hello, good morning. My name is Evan Gardner. And I had a question that maybe everybody here knows, and I don't know, so please fill me in. But is there one thing that happens a lot in the communities that we visit and work with? A lot of the funding comes from health organizations, either drug prevention, tobacco prevention, diabetes, whatever. And one of the things that they're always looking for is data, because they just don't have enough of it in order to write grants, and everybody wants data. And we don't really do anything data except barely track how fluent people are getting, and that's the thing we're hoping is that they're getting more fluent. But we kind of have an opportunity to do a pre and post assessment while we're working with the community. And so I'm just wondering, and then maybe people can fill me in later or pass this around somehow, but is there some kind of survey that has that kind of data collection system so that people who are working in this, which I think is a lot of people in this room, how do we start collecting this data? Because I don't see it getting collected anywhere else, and I don't see anybody really with a, I don't know, how do you say it, really collecting that metadata across a lot of different communities.
Evan, it's nice to see your face. Evan is, where are my keys?
Yeah.
In the communities, the health, in many cases, it is the health facility that knows that language is going to have a connection. Umbrella in the far-off places, I don't think they know, but the communities do. And I would say, Iguai Juan, you figure out in your situation what measures are appropriate, and use your common sense and use those measurements. Talk with the people. Well, you know, and I was just going to think, oh, but you shouldn't tell people what they're going to be tested on because, and devise it yourself and let the rest of us know, and you know, get that movement. Move forward.
Thank you.
So I just want to reassure everyone, we're going to postpone the start of the workshop and talk story sessions until 11:15. So we're going to take a few more moments for questions, but you will have time, you will have a break to use the restrooms to get some coffee or something in between. So don't feel like you have to run away just so you can make the 11 o'clock start there. But so we'll continue with a few more questions and then a few announcements. So I'll continue with this young man in the middle here.
Utlasish Timothy Masu, his Dakshit Tla'o Quiet. Hayat ah yudlurat, nu weyaksu Trent Masu, uishu weyaksu Jesse Masu. Hello, my name is Timothy Masu. I'm from Tla'okwayat, but I live in Yudlurat territory. My parents are Trent and Jesse Masu. I'm from Canada. I live on the west coast of British Columbia. I want to say that that we need respect for our language, and we need respect for ourselves too. If we have respect for our language, we won't have suicide, and we won't have alcohol abuse or drug abuse. And if we get respect, we can move our language forward, and our language can grow instead of where it is right now. True.
Alice has already mentioned me. It's Michael Walsh from Australia, and I take Alice's point about the need for evidence, causation and so on. So I wanted to just report that there are two longitudinal studies going on in Australia. One is headed by an Indigenous health professional called Ray Lovett, and that's Australia-wide. And there will be questions built into that longitudinal study about language, health and well-being. The other very recent announcement, December 2017, was a grant awarded through the National Health and Medical Research Council, again to an Indigenous health professional, Professor Alex Brown, who will be working with a linguist on looking at mental health for a particular community in South Australia, the Bungala, over the next 5 years. So two longitudinal studies headed by Indigenous health professionals. I might just mention that sometimes the quality of the evidence you're going to get may be improved by the questioners being Indigenous health professionals rather than people like me. Ray Ignace mentioned that they put together this languages report in Canada, and then along came a Conservative government. I'm mainly based in the state of New South Wales in Australia, which is the most populous state, and we have a Conservative government who are suggesting by April this year, just next month, they'll be preparing a bill in the New South Wales Parliament to protect and preserve Aboriginal languages. So there's hope.
So let's take one last question, and then we'll do some announcements before wrapping up.
Rilakas Ola. Nuga we molaska lakanumpish to the mamalakla. Ikinokis gahe gahe bakalista pushonala. My name is Vera Newman. I'm from the Numpis and the Mamalakla of British Columbia. I wanted to stand up after Larry spoke about, if we have. I went to a linguist conference in Victoria about 5-6 years ago, and I got turned off because I thought. What I realized after I went with a young lady that was really fluent in her language, knew how to read it and write it. She was our expert. And unfortunately, she passed away, but. What I realized after is that the linguist, I said, well, I'm not coming back here. These people are just using us to get their degrees. And because one of the linguists was arguing with an old man that he was working with from the Coast Salish, and I thought, I'm not coming back here. So when a young man, even though he didn't speak my language, a young man that spoke just now, spoke in his language, it brought tears to my eyes because I realized that what I did then is go back home and got useful because I'm a fluent speaker of Kwakwala. And what we're doing now is with a Sinhala team, a research study team. Sinhala in our language means to be whole, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And we're working hard. And what it does for a person my age to hear our language being spoken is so wonderful to hear that young man get up there and do that. Now we're having our kids in our schools getting up to say, Nuguam, I am. Nuguam, I am, because for many years we weren't allowed to speak our language. Our culture was taken away from us. So I just want the people that are learning about who we are to remember that. Don't think you already know it all, because we're the people and we're the ones that know. So but listening here today fills me with hope that we can work together, because we've proven it, because the people that we've worked, I had a lot of times I mistrusted people that are not our people. But what I realized that we've proven that we could work with non-Indian people, that we have with Helen Brown. She totally respects what we do. She does the work there in the University of British Columbia, and we do the work at home, the three of us. And I know that we can find people that we can work together, and then we can do stuff like this. But I want people to remember that respect what that young man just said, respect what we know, and let's work together. And I needed to say that today. Let's not just use it to get degrees, linguists. Bila Kessler.
Gonna cheese to cut your hand.
We could just have your attention for one moment.
Thank you for everyone for being here. We just wanted to say thank you to Dr. Taff, our friend and relative, Ganesh Cheesh, for having us be a part of this program. When people gather together, it lifts our spirits. When people gather together, it strengthens them. People are happy when we gather together. We're going to sing Lance Twitchell's language chant this morning. It's a chant he composed using four phrases that our elders and speakers have taught us. We're going to give this a try. Please forgive us for any mistakes.
My name is Shkeke, and I would first like to offer our gratitude to Dr. Alice Taft for all that she's done in bringing wellness and language to light and sharing. She works a lot within our communities and with our grandparents. Secondly, we would like to say Gunashish for our invite. Thank you for allowing us to come. It brings us strength when each of us are together. Gunashish Tlain, thank you for allowing us to be on your land. And thirdly, thank you to all of my brothers and sisters, my nieces and nephews, my grandparents. We've come together, and it seems as though when we depart from each other, we're always grasping for that next chance to see each other. This was a result of a gathering that we did when we did Kolang, and we brought together 25 Tlingit language speakers and learners together, and we made great relationships. If you were at Kolang 2016, could you please stand? As you can see, our family grows every single time we come together. For those of you that we see standing here, we thank you for your continued support, and we are becoming a larger family. By the end of this gathering, we will all be standing together.
I was just about to thank Alice, and I don't think I could have done it so well. So I want to